Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Let's go straight out to the HR&P guest line, being joined by the radio guy for the Houston Cougar basketball team, Jeremy Branham. Jeremy's in his ninth year with the U of H men's basketball team. Recently won a long drive championship as well. Jeremy, thank you for taking a few minutes hanging out with the Killer Bees. What do you make of the Cougars tournament run so far? Well, guys, thank you for having me on. Really a big fan of the show. Second favorite show on the ESPN 97.5 lineup. So thank you for having me on. Yeah, the Cougar run's been good. You know, 34 wins, now the most in Houston Cougar basketball history. I think it's been a difficult run. They played the highest possible seed every step of the way. I think an underseeded Gonzaga team in the second round, Purdue in their backyard in the Sweet 16, and then Tennessee had a good home crowd there as well. So it was a good win. Good ride, tough game coming up on Saturday against Duke, but should be a competitive game against two very good teams.
Jeremy, I'm curious because with all that you just mentioned and who the Cougs had to get through to get to this point, the big question for me is that it's almost a different animal when you start talking about Duke, the talent level, the perimeter shooting. And from a Cougar perspective, I think a lot of people are asking, who's going to guard Cooper Flagg? To me, it's more I see them continuing to do their perimeter pressure that they've done that's worked so well all season and specifically in the last two games that they played. But the question for me is now from them also being able to kind of recover, avoid the dribble penetration, and then rush out on the shooters that Duke has plenty of because they're a deeper team. Do you see this being the biggest challenge they face so far? And then how do they kind of combat? Because I don't think it's just Cooper Flagg.
Yeah, it's, to me, it's the best team that they've played to this point. It's the most talented team in the country. I said that at the beginning of the tournament. I still believe that now. I think Duke, they have three projected NBA lotto picks. There's no other team in the country that has that. Cooper Flagg, of those three, is going to be the number one pick, and people call him a generational talent. Knipple, probably a top 10 pick. Malawach, I think, is going to be a top 15 pick as well. And then you combine those three guys with a Sion James, who is a grad student, who was a really good player at Tulane, has had a really good year in his lone season at Duke, and then Tyrese Proctor, who can shoot the heck out of it and is a really good perimeter defender as well. So the talent that this Duke team has is tremendous. How Houston defends Cooper Flagg, to me, will be the biggest thing that I'm watching early in the game, because he plays the four for Duke. You know, he's a guard, but he plays the four because he's so big. I mean, 6'9", 205, plays the four spot. Houston's four is either Juwan or Tugler, but of those two guys, like, you usually put Tugler on the better post guy. And Tugler's faster, quicker, longer. He's defensive player of the year in the Big 12 and won a National Defensive Player of the Year award yesterday, too. So I imagine that you see Tugler on him, but then will Duke just put Flagg on the perimeter where they can't double him? I think Houston's going to try to send extra bodies at Flagg, but it depends on where he's at on the floor. Like, I don't see them doing that if it's from free throw line extended and above. Now, if it's in the corner, maybe you see an extra body. If it's in the post, I think you'll see an extra body. But where he's at on the floor, I think, will dictate that. And I also think that Duke's going to run a lot of pick and roll to try to get Cooper Flagg in some advantageous matchups for them.
Do you think, though, in that pick and roll, that what they've liked to do is they've liked to kind of rush on both sides of the screen and try and get it back out of his hands, that they're going to continue to do that? Because, like I said, but even a Proctor, but you talk about Knipple, you talk about guys that can shoot the basketball. Purdue didn't really have those type guys, and I think that I could see Kelvin still trying to do that kind of bum rush double for Flag. But the scary thing is now, how quickly can they rotate to all the other spots on the perimeter to take away the three ball?
And Duke can shoot.
Yes.
Like that's the fear of it there. Now, Houston, that's like one of their things that they do. Like they'll send – many people call it a bunch of different things. You'll hear hard hedge. You'll hear blitz. You'll also hear – like Samson likes to say get to the line of scrimmage because he really doesn't want to trap out of that. He just wants to force the point guard to either retreat or to try to get the ball out of his hands. They're really taking the point guard away there, at least as a score. So they're not trying to really trap off of that. It's more, okay, let's get the point guard retreating back, nothing moving towards the back basket. Now, really good offense is what they'll do is they'll pass the ball quickly when they see that, whether it's a pocket pass to the short roll who set the screen, or maybe you have a guard that pops for the ball and then hits the roller. Sometimes you see guys get loose in the corner as well. So ball movement will be critical for Duke. Like, can you move the ball quickly, make accurate passes that lead to good shots? And if you can do that quickly and effectively, you can get some good looks at times against Houston. Now, you know, is Flag going to be the guy that you use there, or are you using screens away from the ball to get Cooper Flag open or to get Cooper Flag into favorable matchups? Because those screens can be off the ball as well. So, like, that's the fascinating storyline of this matchup, is that Duke has the best half-court offense in the country and Houston has the best defense in the country. So it's two strengths that are going toe-to-toe against one another, which makes it, I think, a fascinating fight.
Offensively for the Cougs, look, we're talking about – you know, as talented a team as you'll see in the country offensively in Duke, but Duke's not no slouch defensively now. How do you see the Cougs trying to attack Duke when they have the basketball, and who do you see as kind of that X factor offensively?
It kind of depends on how Duke defends. Duke, 1 through 4, Duke's very similar. Like James is 6'6", 220, Proctor 6'6", 185, Knepel 6'7", 215, Flag 6'9", 205. The guy that you'll see not really switch a whole lot is Malawach, who is the rim protector, 7'2", can jump through the roof. They like to keep him at the rim. So I'm fascinated to see how they match up against Houston. Who's the guy that Houston attacks, I think, remains to be seen. I think Houston will dump it off early in the game to Roberts to see how they defend it. If they want to defend it one-on-one, I think that Houston's willing to see how that goes with Roberts for a while. But Uzan usually has big games, or maybe your best option against teams that have very big guards. Crier at times can have trouble getting shots off against tall, lengthy guards like Duke has. But then Houston's also good at getting them open and getting them looks or getting offensive rebounds and kickback threes, stuff like that. Sharp's been much better going to the basket lately. I think he's getting healthier and healthier, and he's been attacking the rim as well. So maybe Sharp in a mismatch that they like to see. But I think those would be the options for the Cougars offensively.
Jeremy Branham, radio voice of the Houston Cougars, joining us here on the Killer Bees. Jeremy, thanks for making time. It's been a struggle to get you on. I was curious what you would think of something KenPom put out the other day, comparing the four Final Four teams to recent national champions. And KenPom's comparison for the Cougs was the 2019 Virginia National Championship team, which I get from kind of a, like just a quick look, oh, it's a defensive team. It's a team that likes to, you know, run to kind of keep a slow pace. But I don't know, I kind of think it undersells the Cougs' offensive ability, especially their ability from three with three guys to shoot over 40%. How do you like that comparison? And do you feel that undersells the Cougars' ability on the offensive end?
I think the Cougars have been underrated offensively under Samson for his entire tenure. I go on a lot of these radio hits, and I've never been more insulted than that question right there. But one of the, you know, things you often hear is like, "Oh, the Cougars' offense is finally good," or, you know, "This is, you know, the first time that Kelvin's had a good offense in Houston." Well, if you go back and you look at some previous years, they've had some really good offenses. Rob Gray was a very good offensive player. Rob Gray in the tournament, I think, broke Steph Curry's record for the most points in the first two rounds of the tournament. Like, he could go score some points. Quentin Grimes was a great offensive player at Houston, All-American. Marcus Sasser was an All-American. So they've had some, I mean, the Final Four team, when you rolled out Dejon Giroux, Marcus Sasser, Quentin Grimes, Fabian White could score on you. Like, Houston's had good offensive teams. What I would say that makes this team offensively unique and different is that they have versatility. Like, four guys in the starting five can score. Uzan can get you 20. Crier can get you 30. Sharp can get you 20, 25. Jawan Roberts, if you want to go one-on-one in the post and he has a good matchup, can get you 20 as well. And then you combine that with their shooting. I mean, they're number one in the country in three-point percentage. people kind of overlook. They're number one in the country in three-point percentage. So that, to me, is what sets this year's offense apart from other good offenses that Kelvin Sampson has had, is that they're versatile, way more than one option, and they shoot the three ball really, really well, which is something that, you know, not many teams are number one in the country shooting from behind the three-point line. So I think that gives Houston a bit of, you know, something unique and different than what we've normally seen over the past. Jeremy, real quick before we let you go, I want to thank you so much for coming on, taking a few minutes to hang out with us. Have a great call on Saturday, and best of luck to the Houston Cougars. Thank you, guys. Really big fan of the show. Make sure you tell John and Lance hello for me. I love those guys. All right, will do. Appreciate you having you, or we appreciate you coming on. All right, 713-780-ESPN. We'll get to your thoughts on the Cougars when we return. Also, is this excuse making, or is this legit? Something that Joe Espada had to say after yesterday's game. 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. You should be looking for an excuse to head out to Two Creeks Crossing Resort on Lake Livingston. You're stressed, your anxiety's high, things are annoying you. I know how it goes. You're looking to escape the rat race, the hustle and bustle. I get it. We all get it. And I have the best weekend idea for you to get away from all of that. Two Creeks Crossing Resort on Lake Livingston. Escape the city, escape the stress, escape whatever is ailing you, and get out to Lake Livingston at Two Creeks Crossing Resort. Enjoy the relaxing, great outdoors. Get some rest and relaxation. Book your stay at twocreekscrossingresort.com now. From open green spaces to wildlife you just don't see inside the loop to beautiful, majestic trees, enjoy the nature. Also, some of the best fishing in Texas, by the way. You can't beat that. One of the great perks of Two Creeks Crossing Resort on Lake Livingston, it's only 90 minutes away. You're there in an hour and a half. You escape the city without traveling too far, without wasting your time off. Don't spend all of your time off traveling. Get over to Two Creeks Crossing Resort on Lake Livingston in an hour and a half. You can play some pickleball out there. They have some pickleball courts. You can kayak if you like doing that. How about hanging out at the pool with a drink? Hike their 92-acre property. Lots of options out there at Two Creeks Crossing Resort. From glamping to cabins to tree houses, or just pull up the RV, they have the perfect stay for everyone. Book your weekend escape now at twocreekscrossingresort.com. That's twocreekscrossingresort.com.
The best in Houston sports talk is ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
That was a good get there, Brian. Maybe the best get you've ever had. But I do appreciate the fairness of having the Duke radio guy on and having the Houston radio guy on.
We just had to lead with the more talented one, but we've got the Cougars guy on eventually.
I mean, I don't have any dog in this fight. I don't care who you think is better. It felt like my innie was talking to my outie during that entire segment.
You want to explain that for people who don't watch Severance?
No, not really.
Okay, all right.
No, it's an Easter egg. If you watch Severance, you picked up on the Easter egg. If you don't watch Severance, you didn't pick up on the Easter egg. You're wondering, what the heck is Branham talking about with innie and outie talk? Is it his belly button? Something going on there? Yeah, but if you watch it, you watch it. You got it. Sometimes I like to drop little subtle Easter eggs. If you're paying attention, you get it. If you don't, oh well. Oh well. No sweat off my back. It's all right. Astros will be playing later tonight. They take on the Twins. So weird that they have back-to-back 6:05 starts. Hopefully the offense likes hitting away from Minute Maid Park. We will see. Before we talk about the Astros, a few people on the text line, 713-780-3776. Ocho, if I were Duke, I wouldn't bother with pick and roll. They literally have size advantage at every position. So whoever gets the ball should just attack his given defender one-on-one. There might be something to that. I don't think it'll be exactly how Ocho drew it up, Blankers, but, mm-hmm. I mean, you could just kind of isolate. You can get a favorable matchup that you like without any sort of switches to pick apart that matchup or to hunt matchups and kind of space the floor and go one-on-one with a matchup that's already been predetermined pretty much.
I was kind of thinking about it last night and this morning about maybe even – you know, depending on who brings up the ball for Duke, where you start flag kind of like from the nail to the top of the key, and he can facilitate from there where they get close to half court, they throw it over the top, kind of beat the first line of defense for the Cougs from the backcourt perspective, get him in a possible three position stance where he can just spin with the ball at the top of the key. He can facilitate. He can get, you know, a matchup one-on-one. He can pass and pick. So I'm curious how Duke tries to combat what U of H is going to do because they're so darn good athletically on the perimeter.
Yeah, it really is a fun matchup. Morris on the YouTube says the Duke guy was better. I agree. I thought the Duke guy was better. More blue blood.
Jeremy, don't you think that the key to is just how soft of a whistle there's going to be?
Oh, no doubt.
Between experience and the whistle, I think it could – if they get a soft whistle where they're going to let them play, I think the Cougs benefit obviously there. But then I also think the Cougars' experience – against a Duke team that's never been in this situation before for the most part with all these young guys. I think those two things could really help them.
I hope so. Proctor has some experience,
yes.
Junior. Sion James doesn't have tournament experience, but he's been through battles, fifth-year senior. And they have some guys on the bench, like Mason Gillis was a transfer from Purdue. They played in the national championship game last year. But their core guys are freshmen. So, yeah, I mean, that. Hopefully that is an advantage. Hopefully playing in San Antonio is an advantage. Hopefully playing in a stadium as opposed to an arena is an advantage because Houston did that last week, and that was the only regional that did that. But it's no secret that Houston would like a looser whistle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, no,
Texer, I'm curious to see how Uzan performs against constant barrage of length. At 6'4", he usually thrives versus smaller point guards, but against Duke, he won't have that luxury. Yeah, this one might be more his handle and his shake than his length if he were to have a big game Ocho, but I think that's a fair point.
Yeah, I think he could beat Knipple off the dribble.
Yeah, well, I don't know if Knipple is going to be the guy who matches up on him, you know? Like, I don't know. Like, if you were – okay, let's play it out. What do you think? Because you have Uzan, Cryer, Sharp, Roberts, Tugler. They have – they're starting five, and obviously this is going to change a lot and switches and screens and pick and rolls. They have James Proctor, Knipple, Flag, and Malawach. How do you think they man it up when the Houston Cougars bring it down the floor for the first time?
Obviously, Malawach is going to be on Roberts. I think that
– I think so.
I think Tugler's going to be on Flag. I mean, I think Flag is going to guard Tugler and probably –
I think Houston might try to go inside to Tugler then.
If Tugler can put the ball in the basket, that'd be great. I think that he's shown me a lot more offense than he had a year ago. I hope that the little push and the little jump hook are there. I think the key for me is I think that Duke would like to think that they can almost put Knipple on Sharp because of the kind of similarities, because Sharp's a more physical, bigger guard that might be better for him, not as quick. Because I think if you put Knipple on either Cryer or Uzan, I think that you could beat him off the dribble.
Yeah, it's going to be – okay. Yeah, if I had to guess – see, the post is interesting because you would want Malawach on the better post score.
That's why I think he guards Roberts.
Yeah, I hear you on that.
Okay.
And you might be right. Like, I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm just saying, like, okay, I'm thinking about it out loud here. Because if Flag's on Tugler, not that Tugler's like this great low post scorer, but he's fast and he's quick. And I think he could go by Flag. And then the other aspect of this, too, is – okay, Roberts, like, you just get outside, let Malawach get outside to defend you,
yes.
And then you get your guards involved, and all of a sudden you have Tugler versus Flag on a missed shot.
Plus, what I like about that is I think as a more physical, better offensive rebounder or rebounder in general, I like Tugler if Flag is trying to guard him. And like you said, Flag has to be aware that Tugler has some quickness, but then when the shot goes up, Tugler's so good with his wingspan too and his physicality to be able to get offensive rebounds and maybe get inside to where I think that might be a problem for Flag and maybe get him in foul trouble.
Yeah, that would be huge. I think that will be a key stat too, is, you know, rebounding. It always is, but especially in this game with Houston's missed shots. Like, will Duke finish off a defensive stop with a board, or will Houston have a bunch of looks at second-chance opportunities, which might be their best looks at three? Like, if they're getting a bunch of offensive rebounds, kick back, shoot a three, that might be a better look, and oftentimes is a better look than whenever the defense is set up and playing against you. There are three guards in Houston's three guards. Like, you had Knipple on Sharp?
Yes.
Yeah, that's probably right. Knipple on Sharp, Proctor or James on using. I don't know. See, they're so interchangeable. They have a bunch of options there.
I think they put James on Uzan and they put Proctor on LJ.
James on Uzan and Proctor on LJ. Yeah,
yep.
I could see that.
Yep.
I could see that. I could see that. Texter, if I'm Duke, I'm going at Tugler to get him in foul trouble. Yeah, I think that would be a good game plan, especially if he's on flag. I imagine that Duke will try to do that. Texter, write it down. Duke will win by 10 or more Saturday. Bam. Relax, Wally Zerbiak.
Go ahead.
Relax,
that's it.
Wally.
Shut him down for the day. Just crush him.
I mean, you might be right, but let's. Wally Zerbiak had that take on the CBS Sports show that he does. Can the Rockets draft Mama Watch? He called them Mama Watch, not Mala Watch. Can the Rockets draft Mama Watch from Duke with their Phoenix draft pick? They need a rim protector.
Too high.
I mean,
you want him?
He's pretty dang good, man. He's 7'2". His wingspan's probably 7'8". I mean, he can jump through the roof. Now, he doesn't have much of an offensive game. It's mostly, like, garbage stuff and, like, lobs. But on the defensive end, like, that guy is a monster.
Oh, no doubt. Look, I think that he is, I don't want to say elite, but he is one of the better defenders in this draft from a big perspective coming out. I just question his offense for a team that, you could have a spot for him. But I think that the Rockets would be looking for more of an offensive presence.
I mean, he could be your replacement for Steven Adams.
I think they want to bring Steven Adams back. I can see it being like a Jock Landale type. But, you know, again, I think if that pick is, depending on when Jeremy and I kicked it around, but as long as it's in like the top 10 range, I'm not sure I want to spend it on him.
10 might be a little early. Like, yep. I've seen him like in the teens.
That's
like
off top 15 to 20, yes.
Yeah, but I mean, he is pretty elite defensively. He's pretty dang good. I think that would be like probably the earliest of his range on where he would be drafted. But yeah, somebody could be in play. Francis Arsenault and Wilson will need to step up big defensively. Everybody's going to need to step up big defensively. But you're right. You're right. Arsenault's length too. Like, he might be a defensive X factor in this game because he's long but has guard-like skills, which might be critical against Duke. Had a good game, too, against Tennessee, so maybe having some momentum. Texter, Duke covers the 5-point spread. U of H is a team that is great, but will never get over the hump. Okay. All right, 8532. We'll see if that comes to fruition. We'll check it out on that. All right, 713-780-ESP. We'll get to this Espada sound in a moment, but Julian's been hanging on, wants to talk about the Astros. Oh, okay. Thank you for letting me know that, Brian. That Julian couldn't wait it out a couple more minutes. Julian's not a marathon man. Julian doesn't have endurance. He got a little tired of waiting. You can call back, Julian. 713-780-3776. Espada said something after yesterday's game, talking about the Astros' strikeout struggles. Is Espada making excuses, or is he legit? 713-780-3776. It is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
I assume you knew?
We're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
I heard Lance talking about me. Lance, keep your name out your mouth. Cam Smith, by the way, 182 average so far, 539 OPS. So maybe Lance will have that promo taken out of the system because – I think Brian, I didn't say Cam Smith's going to be bad. I'm just having fun with it.
Yeah, bum.
Bum. Thank you, Israel. Maybe Cam Smith will get going in Minnesota tonight when they play 6:05 first pitch. First of a 3-game series. Playing it over 4 days, though. They have a rare Friday off. So that's interesting. Texter's trying to pull a fast one on his Blankers. Texter says the Astros are playing right now and actually have 4 runs scored so far, best of the season yet. Yeah, they have 4 runs. You expect us to believe that? April Fool's was 2 days ago, Texter.
Yeah, come on, man. Runs. I mean, people tried to do this crap yesterday, too.
That's ridiculous. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Since there's not Astros going on right now, we can talk about the Astros. The manager of the Stros, Joe Espada. A lot of people are nicknaming Joe. I wanted to go with the most interesting manager in the world because he's. I think he kind of looks like that Dos Equis guy a bit, but he really hasn't lived up to the name. So I don't feel like he deserves the moniker. Some people call him Sleepy Joe, which is kind of a play on our former president. Some people call him Mocha Joe. because of Curb Your Enthusiasm. So a lot of different names from Espada. But Espada was talking after yesterday's game. They scored three runs, lost by two. Maybe someday the Astros will score more than three runs. Don't see it happening anytime soon. But he was talking after the game. They struck out a bunch in yesterday's game. They've really had a bunch of punch-outs all year long. And, like, they've had this new approach. We want to see more pitches. We want to draw, you know, work counts, draw walks, do all of this stuff. And, you know, maybe that'll come at some point. But the Astros have also striked out a ton. They have 54 strikeouts and 180 at-bats. That's a lot. That's a lot of strikeouts in the first six games. Chandler Rome, after the game yesterday, asked Joe Espada about it. And here was Joe Espada's response.
The only thing I can say, you know, we face some pretty good pitching. And I know we'll cut those punch-outs out.
There you go. They've seen pretty good pitching. So when you look at who they've seen on the mound, because I went and looked at all these starters, and look, I mean, relievers also come into play. I'm not going to sit there and type out every single reliever that the Astros have faced so far through six games as well. But the starting pitchers that they have faced through yesterday, Clay Holmes, Tyler Megill, Griffin Canning, Jordan Hicks, Logan Webb, and I don't even know how to pronounce this dude's name. They were playing when we were on the air yesterday. Landon Ropp, who's a 26-year-old rookie. I don't know how to say his name. So those are the six pitchers the Astros have faced. And look, Logan Webb's good. Mm-hmm. Jordan Hicks has stuff, and I believe he did have good stuff when he faced the Astros the other night. Clay Holmes, like, they're converting him to a starter. He has some stuff. But if the Clay Holmes, Miguel, Canning, Hicks, Webb, Ralphs of the world are mowing you down, sure, it's pretty good pitching. Everybody has pretty good pitching. Every single big league starter over one singular game can shove. But if you're struggling with the Holmes, Miguel's, Canning, Hicks, Webbs, and Ralphs of the world, and this is the performance, you ain't a very good ball club, Joe.
No, because you're going to face better than that. You're going to face the DeGroms, and you're going to face the, you know, some of the Yankees pitchers even without Cole. You're going to face, you know, the Crochets and the better and the Detroit's Cy Young Award winner.
Skubal.
You're going to face all these kind of guys. Now we're talking about, you know, top-level starting pitching. Logan Webb's the best guy that you mentioned out of all those guys. You know, the Yankees' closer at the start of the year started game two. So, or one or two, which one? Either one. But the point being, you are the team equivalent of Rafael Devers so far. You're striking out a ton. You're not putting bat to baseball. You're not getting hits for average and or scoring the runs that we all thought that this team was capable of doing right now. And it's problematic. And you can try and put a Band-Aid on it or cover it up however you wish. But sooner, hopefully, rather than later, they snap out of this. And some of the guys we talked about yesterday that they spent money on and or put up in the top of their lineup are going to have to start producing.
Yeah, the problem, and I understand what's happening here. It's a manager that's trying to keep his team from pressing. Like, we're not idiots. Like, we know that's what Joe Espada is doing. Like, we're going to overreact to press conference sound. It's talk radio. It's what everybody does. And I don't really – this isn't like a criticism of Joe. Like, I understand what you're doing, Joe. Like, pretty good pitching. Defend your guys. Six games. You don't want them pressing. You might sense them pressing a little bit, so you're trying to have some levity and ease the tension. So, like, I actually don't disagree a whole lot with the, you know, the psychology aspect of it. But if we're just dissecting it, the Astros struggling with those guys, if that continues all year, then you're an under 500 team. And that's yes. That's the truth of the situation. Because Holmes, Miguel, Canning, Hicks, Webb, Ralph, if those are the six pitchers that you're facing over a six-game stretch, and you're struggling with all of those guys, then you're not going to have a very good offense. And look, I think the Astros' offense is going to figure it out. I think they're going to be above average. I think they still have a chance to be good, all of those things. But I just want to call, you know, bring some truth here, Joe. Bring some truth here to Astro fans. If you're struggling with this collection of a half a dozen starters, you're not going to have a whole lot of success offensively this year.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, and you look at the top of that lineup specifically, but just all around, but you got to believe Yordan's going to snap out of this, and you got to believe that Yordan's going to get back to form. But Christian Walker is a guy you went out and committed 3 years at good money to that you believe is going to be a guy that, you know, as much as, you know, we kidded around what we did yesterday and the fact that I kept saying he was barreling up baseballs, you got to believe that he's going to settle in. Paredes the same way. We already saw some signs of that these guys at the top part of the lineup are going to start producing and they're going to start being productive. It's tough because we're only two series in, but because we care so much and we watch everything that they do, ugly start, but it's fixable.
Yeah, 713-780-ESPN. Brian, I know that these comments from Joe had you feel in some sort of way.
Yeah, it triggered me, and this is, I think, PTSD from being an Astros fan going back to the late 90s, but we always remember the quotes from Bagwell and Biggio about tipping their cap the three times the Braves beat their ass in the playoffs. And look, that's fine when you're facing Maddox, Glavine, Smoltz, three Hall of Famers, three of the greatest, I don't know, 20, 30 pitchers of all time. But like you ran down the list, the only ace amongst the six guys they faced so far is Logan Webb. And I wouldn't even say among, you know, the aces in Major League Baseball, he's on the elite of those, you know, of those aces. And the rest of the guys, I mean, Griffin Canning's been a journeyman. You mentioned, you know, McGill and Holmes. And we're talking about converted, you know, relief pitchers. I get Joe's having his guys back, but the idea of we're tipping our cap to Logan Webb and a bunch of journeymen just isn't extremely frustrating because, okay, I'll even give you the notion that maybe these guys, you know, like Holmes and McGill are taking a step up. Maybe they're better than they have been in their career. But, I mean, Christian Walker, Isak Paredes, these guys have also been good in their career. Jose Altuve, Yordan Alvarez, these guys have been good in their career. Just because you're facing good pitching, if you have good hitters, we don't have to tip our cap to them. It feels like a defeatist attitude that it just annoys me to no end.
I do think that he's protected his guys.
Probably
I do think
so.
That it's a let's not let the tension get too high. You know, let's fly to Minnesota and, you know, try to score four runs in the first four innings against Joe Ryan. That's probably what he's trying to do. You know, good. If this is really a good psychological play, that like I am saying that's what he's trying to do. If this is Joe Espada really like taking that next step up as a manager of the Astros, and the Astros will hang a four spot up on Joe Ryan in the first four innings and chase him after five. They'll hit back-to-back home runs in the second inning. Like if he is a good manager and he's playing the psychological game, I think that stuff has to happen when they take on the Twins tonight. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Philip, you're in the Hive with the Bees. What's up, Philip?
Hey, guys. I've watched many movies in my life, and I can say for sure the solution for the Astros is one of four things. So they either have to go to a water park together, get in a fist fight in the locker room, do a bunch of pranks to the, you know, sounds of classic rock, or we have a cardboard cutout of Jim Crane in which one article of clothing is removed after each win. I'll let you guys debate and tell me which one you think is going to fix the problem. Love to hear your opinion. Thank you.
I was curious if
rack 'em.
I was curious
was
if
good.
Philip was going to throw the slump buster in there as part of all of this, because that was what I was expecting his last one.
I think I picked up on
San Antonio.
Most of the movies.
Yes, you are. You would have plenty of qualified candidates.
This might be Mark Grace's favorite city.
Maybe so. Maybe so.
You making a Czech reference? Some big old ladies?
Yeah, Charles Barkley knows than most.
Brian, there was a lot going on with that sentence. There was many references there. That was like a triple entendre.
I caught the one to Major League at the very end. I think he also referenced Bull Durham.
Which is the one? Okay, so cardboard cutout was Major League.
That's Major League, yeah.
Which pranks? Which movie do they have?
I thought that was
pranks?
Bull Durham.
The Bull Durham one was, didn't they pull the sprinklers and force the rain out?
I thought there's a lot
the
of pranks in that movie, yeah.
That's when he's like, I can get you a rain out. But that wasn't like because they were having, were they having locker room strife there though? I don't know if that was because of the strife. I don't remember. When did they have the fist fight in a baseball
that
movie?
That was the one I didn't get.
Yeah, I didn't either.
Yeah, I don't know that one.
Did they fight Roger Dorn? I know Roger Dorn took one for the team and he didn't want to.
Well, yeah, he and Joe Boo were not seeing eye to eye. But, yeah, I don't think they ever got to fisticuffs.
Which one's the water park?
I think that was I'm trying to remember the name of the movie. It was the one where the little kid owned started pitching for the Cubs, the rookie of the year. You're right.
Angel in the outfield.
No, it is Little Big League, where the kid was the manager of the Twins. Yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
Rookie of the year is where he broke his arm and threw 100.
Yes, for the Cubs, yes.
Little Big League is the one where he managed. So they went to a water park on Little Big League?
I'm pretty sure, yes.
Which is the one where, was it Keanu Reeves and
Hardball.
Hardball, where they're like in the pool?
Keanu Reeves movie is Hardball. I don't remember much from the movie though.
There was he was playing in the Cape Cod there. He was playing Scooby Doo was his catcher, right?
I don't know. I
want to say
well.
I want to say Scooby Doo was his catcher in that Hardball movie. Keanu Reeves. I can't remember. No, it wasn't Keanu Reeves. It was the guy that looks like him. Or was it Keanu Reeves? No, it was Keanu Reeves. He just looked a little bit different. Who was the love interest in... That was...
In Hardball?
Yeah, it was...
I don't recall.
Because they went to
the IMDb page.
Am I thinking of a different movie? It was... What's her? Jessica Alba.
Who?
Jessica Alba was in a baseball
Hardball
movie.
I don't know, but
maybe I'm confusing the movie. Jessica Alba
plays Hardball.
No, not Jessica Alba. Who was the girl who dates Justin Timberlake or was married to Justin
Jessica
Timberlake?
Jessica Biel was the love interest of Freddie Prinze Jr. in Summer
That's
Catch.
That's what I'm thinking
in
of.
Summer Catch.
I was thinking of Summer Catch.
Yeah, Hardball Summer looks Catch. Like the love interest was played by Diane Lane.
Yeah, I wasn't thinking of that one. I was thinking of Summer Catch. That's the one that was in the Cape Cod.
Yes, it was.
And then they had a pool scene, and I thought that's what he meant by water park, because that wasn't really a water park, and it wasn't. I mean, some would call it a fight, but not a fist fight, certainly.
Did you guys ever watch Hardball? Because I don't remember it well.
I did not.
But I pulled up the IMDb page, and the one sentence description of this movie is just priceless, and now I want to watch it just quickly. Quote, a gambling addict and ticket scalper living an aimless life reluctantly agrees to coach a Little League team from the Chicago Projects as part of a loan agreement. Like, I don't know.
Sounds like a glorified Bad News Bears, the original.
Kind of. It feels like AI wrote that, but that movie came out 25 years ago.
It's a good call, Philip. The text line knew what I was talking about with Summer Catch. I definitely was thinking Summer Catch. I couldn't think of her name, though. And I knew it wasn't Keanu Reeves. It was the dude that looks like Keanu Reeves. Don't you think
Jr.
they look alike? Am I nuts to think that they look alike?
Yeah. A little.
Yeah, a little bit.
A little.
I think that they have some similarities.
That's a good movie. I enjoyed that movie.
Yeah, it's okay. It's fine.
It was
fine. It was all right. It was pretty good. I thought that's what he meant by water park, though. I don't remember the water park scene in Little Big League.
And the Costner movie, that was a serious baseball
movie.
For Love of the Game.
I didn't enjoy
there
that
wasn't
one.
Anything in, there wasn't
yeah,
anything
it was
like that
slow.
In there. Yeah.
It
was okay.
It was sappy.
I mean, it was not
like
a perfect game. I mean, it was a sappy movie. Hardball is awesome. Rest in peace, G-Baby. That's the one where he's listening to the headphones. He's like, that's why they call me Big Papa. I'm pretty sure. Hardball is a real tearjerker, says Tyler and Conroe. Hardball is Reeves coaching. You think about the replacements? No. Did you ever watch the remake of Bad News Bears?
Oh, no, I didn't. The one with Billy Bob? No, I didn't watch it.
I did not either.
It was not good. It was awful. Hardball is like the baseball Mighty Ducks. Hardball is a really good movie. Must watch. Little Big League at theme park with water ride. There you go. Hardball was the first movie that made me cry. Rest in peace, G-Baby.
I think I got to watch this movie.
I remember watching it a long time ago. I might have to rewatch it, though. I really don't have a ton of recollection about it. What's your favorite baseball movie? Let's do it on the other side. 713-780-ESPN. What is your favorite baseball movie? Also, there's more nicknames on Joe Espada that have come through the text line. Which of these Joe Espada nicknames is the best? 713-780-3776. It is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. First, I got to tell you about HR&P. They were announced again to the Cougar 100. I think it's like the ninth year in a row that they've done it. It's because HR&P is great. Mike Holley, U of H class of 1990, go Cougs. Chris Fisher over there at A&M, he's probably looking for a good basketball coach. But HR&P has been protecting the interests of businesses for nearly 25 years. HR&P provides comprehensive human capital management services, including HR compliance, benefits administration, and payroll. HR&P will also work with you to customize a plan for whatever you need. There's nothing cookie cutter about HR&P. You need a little help, a lot of help, anything in between. HR&P will create a plan for what you and your business needs. Their customer service, second to nobody. They're elite. They are top shelf. You'll never talk to a stranger on the other side of the line either. You'll be calling someone familiar with you and familiar with your company. I can speak to that customer service anytime I have a question. Quick response, easy to understand. Let HR&P take on the demands of human resources. Eliminate your HR burden so you can get back to growing your business. Give them a call at 281-880-6525 and let HR&P customize a plan for you. 281-880-6525 or check them out online at hrp.net. That's hrp.net.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 97.5. 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
B. Hannon says Hardball sucked. Keanu Reeves, overrated actor. Moneyball is solid. Vermont says League of Their Own. B. Hannon says Angels in the Outfield. Teared up when I was a kid. Let's see what the text line is saying. No Angels in the Outfield love. Best baseball movies, Bull Durham. Sandlot, says somebody. Mr. 3000.
Oh, man. Boy.
Bernie Mac joint, yeah.
He was playing the Astros.
As a brewer.
Yeah.
Facing the Stros. Favorite baseball movies, the 77 Bad News Bears, Breaking Training. Bad News Bears. Assume it's the Astrodome. I have seen that movie.
I have too.
It is at the Dome. Yeah. Mr. 3000, rest in peace, Bernie Mac. Does basketball count?
They were shooting baskets, so I would say no.
Favorite baseball movies, says a texter in order, Major League, Field of Dreams, Pride of the Yankees. Sandlot's the only correct answer. For Love of the Game, for Date Night with Your Woman, Jordan. Movies are bad date nights, Jordan. Just a little advice from me.
Not a lot of interaction. Obviously.
Sometimes happily married man. No, you just don't have communication.
That's what I mean. Interaction, yeah.
You don't. Okay. That's a weird way of phrasing that. Okay. Mr. Baseball is my favorite baseball movie, if I'm not mistaken. Hardball is one of Michael B. Jordan's first movies. That's correct, because I just went to the IMDb, and he is there. Michael B. Jordan's a great actor. Favorite would be either Major League or Brewster's Millions, if that counts as a baseball movie. I don't think Brewster Millions counts as a baseball movie.
I don't either.
I don't think so. Perfect Game, Mr. Baseball, Mr. Baseball. The Fan is the best baseball movie. Wesley Snipes and Robert De Niro. Have y'all seen that?
It's a good movie. Yeah.
I really enjoy it.
Yeah, I thought really it was a good movie. Yep.
I don't know if I would call it a baseball movie. Like, the setting is definitely in a baseball park, and he is a baseball player. But that's, I mean, it's more about the dude committing, like, you know, trying to blackmail him and take money and all that stuff. Like, I don't know. Naked Gun is my favorite, not a baseball movie. 61 was a good one. Talent for the Game with Edward Jones Olmos. I've never seen that one.
I've never heard of that one.
Me what either. Is it?
Talent of the Game?
No.
Walking Tall.
I liked the Jackie Robinson.
Walking Tall is not a baseball movie.
What's the Jackie Robinson movie?
42.
42. I liked 42.
Yeah, that was pretty good. I thought it was pretty good. I wouldn't have it as my favorite, but it's a good movie. The YouTubers, Desert Stro is Sandlot number one. Morris says Moneyball. The Fan, the Benchwarmers. What is your favorite?
Field of Dreams, to me, it's a baseball movie, kind of, but it's just so much more. There's not a lot of baseball in it until they just actually get the guys on the field. I enjoyed Field of Dreams, but I love Major League, and I loved Bull Durham.
Major League and Bull Durham. Yeah, Major League's really good. It's like a comedy, so it's a little different than the others. I really like A League of Their Own. I think League of Their Own's very good. I think 61 is very good. That's a good call on 61.
Oh, yeah.
That was a Billy Crystal production, right?
Yeah, very good. Texture says The Town stole from Fenway. Have you ever seen The Town? There's a chase and
movie.
The dude's climbing up the green. Okay. There's like a chase and the dude's climbing up the green monster. Like, that is, it's like, I would love to do that. I want to get chased up the green monster. Rookie of the Year. Man, there's a lot of text on this. Let's go out to the HRNP listener line. Richard, you're in the high. What's your favorite baseball movie, Richard?
Well, I've got one that y'all probably have never heard of. It's never anybody's list. It's called Bang the Drum Slowly.
Yeah, I've never seen that.
It's Michael Albiati and Robert De Niro as a major league catcher.
Oh, wow. I just pulled up a picture of it.
It's written by a great sports writer, a baseball writer, Mark Harris, did several back in the 70s. And this movie was in the late 70s, early 80s. And it's really, really a good story with a lot of heart. And Robert De Niro plays a numbnuts number three catcher that gets elevated through injuries for a Yankee. It's not Yankees, but a New York team that's in the hunt.
Oh, okay.
It's Bang the Drum Slowly.
I'll check it out,
and
Richard.
I'll
see
the worst one.
Okay.
I'll give you the worst baseball movie, and y'all never heard of it. I don't know if you've ever heard of the player, Jimmy Pearsall.
Oh, yeah. Jimmy Pearsall had a lot of problems. He had a lot of issues, yes.
And they had Anthony Perkins playing Jimmy Pearsall. The highlight of Jimmy Pearsall's career, he was actually a pretty decent player, but he hit a home run and ran the bases backwards, and they suspended him. But Anthony Perkins, this had to be the first time he ever had any type of ball in his hand. And it was really, I mean, I was a young,
young kid, and it was just laugh out loud funny, but not on purpose.
It was just funny because it was so bad. Appreciate it, Richard. I'll look into banging the drum slowly. I'm interested in that. I'll check that one out and report back. I wonder where I can find it. It does have a 90 on Rotten Tomatoes, so there is some validation to what Richard was saying. Yeah. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go back out to the HRNP listener line. Angel, you're in the Hive. What's up, Angel?
Hey, guys. There's actually three movies that I really like seeing when it comes to baseball. And I'm just going to rank them one through three. Number one is going to be Moneyball. That's top of the line right there, Moneyball. Number two, it'll be Rookie of the Year. And number three, I don't know if you guys ever heard of this movie. It's called Million Dollar Arm, which are like, I think.
Yeah, it's Hillary Swank.
Sorry?
No, I was kidding. I was making a bad joke.
Oh, okay. No. Yeah, it's with these cricket players becoming baseball players. I don't know if you guys ever heard of that movie, but I thought that was a really interesting movie. So it's called Million Dollar Arms. It's a sports agent who's pretty much going downhill, and he's just desperate to find, you know, some kind of a break. And he finds these cricket players, and some way, somehow, he manages to turn them into baseball players. And it's a true story. So that's something to check out. All right, thank you, guys.
John Hamm plays the agent. I vaguely remember this story. I wouldn't have been able to remember without the call, but now that I Googled it, I vaguely remember reading about this because he did find like a couple of players that they never, I don't think they ever turned into big leaguers, but I think they pitched in the minors.
What was the one based off the true story about the guy that was the high school baseball coach that could throw 100 and he ended up making it for the Rays?
The Rookie.
Yeah, it was The Rookie.
Was that what it was?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was not bad. That was okay. Favorite baseball movies, set, go. 713-780-3776. Who cares? The Astros are playing right now. It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.